Sermon 162. In just a few words, Imam Ali says what he had done for those who were under his government. I have, in a meritorious way, done my duty to you, like your neighbor and friend. I have protected you to the best of my capacity. I have freed you from oppression, disgrace, humiliation, and dishonor. Overlooking such of your numerous shortcomings and faults as could be easily detected, I did all this in return for the small services to Islam rendered by you. Sermon 163. In this sermon, after praising Allah and explaining glories of His creation, Imam Ali expresses wonder at the people who say that their hopes rest with Allah. They in fact serve men of power and wealth more willingly than they serve Allah. He then advises people to keep the lives of prophets as models before their eyes, especially the life of our holy prophet, whose greatness of character and ways of life he has set forth in detail. His decrees are irreversible and decisive. They are based on His supreme wisdom and justice. His pleasure or approval manifests itself in His mercy and forgiveness. His decisions are final because His knowledge covers everything and every fact. His pardon is due to His forbearance, compassion, and charity for His creatures. O Lord, You deserve praise for every blessing which You confer, as well as for every happiness which You take away from us. You deserve praise for every cure which a diseased body is granted, as well as for every illness that one suffers from. You deserve such praises as are fit and suitable to Your glory,
praises which can deserve Your approval,
which can be sublime enough to express Your greatness, which can best enunciate various aspects of Your glory and might, which can be agreeable to You, which cannot be considered unfit to attain the eminence and honor of Your pleasure and transcendence of Your approval and acceptance. O Lord, we do not know how great You are, but we know that You are immortal and eternal, and You hold such supreme power and wisdom that any form of weakness, sleep, or forgetfulness can never come near You. No one can ever see or comprehend You, but You see everything. You know the age of every creature and every object, and the universe is under Your complete control. Wonders of Your creation and examples of Your might, which we see around us, hold us surprised and awestruck, and make us realize how great Your wisdom and knowledge are, and how supreme Your might and power is. Yet, O Lord, our minds are unable to go deep into or probe the expanse of Your realm, to comprehend or conceive the processes of Your creation, to survey or understand the laws which govern Your universe, and to realize the stages through which they have passed. Such are our limitations in respect of Your creations, which we can see and behold. But we are sure that those of Your creations which are absolutely beyond our knowledge, which we cannot see, visualize, or understand, and which are concealed under heavy curtains of limitations of human mind and knowledge, are even more wonderful, more mysterious, and more awe-inspiring. Whoever frees his mind from worldly attachments and desires, and concentrates upon the greatness of your realm around him, finds that his mind reels, his vision and its aids, telescopes, microscopes, spectroscopes, radars, etc., fail. His intellect is confused, and his knowledge cannot help him to understand anything. O Lord, how have you created the space? Why have you brought the creatures into being? How the galaxies are floating in the primordial or elementary gas? How have you stabilized the earth in the worlds of waxing, undulating and rolling fluids, gases? Man often wrongly claims that he relies only upon Allah. But by Almighty Allah, his actions belie him and his belief. Actions of every man naturally disclose what he expects as reactions in the form of rewards or punishments. But so far as his faith in Allah is concerned, it is found that his belief in Allah and his justice is not pure or sincere. Man appears to be affected by every kind of fear except fear of Allah. It appears as if fear of Allah has been accorded a secondary importance by him. Obviously, man should expect great rewards from Allah and smaller returns from his fellow beings. And yet, he serves man more sincerely, vigorously, and diligently than he serves Allah. Man's behavior towards Allah is very amazing indeed. He grudges Allah what he willingly and sincerely offers to man. O man, are you afraid that your fellow beings will not reward you unless you work for them more faithfully and persistently than you work for Allah? Or is it that you do not expect to find any source of reward more genuine, objective, and real than from a man like yourself? Similar is the phenomena of human mind when he is afraid of another individual or society of his fellow beings. This fear in him manifests itself more strikingly than the fear of Allah. Why is it so? Does man's belief in displeasure and anger of another man is more sincere, convincing, and forceful than his belief in the wrath of Allah? Does he believe that anger of man will bear immediate results and wrath of Allah is mere heresy or something which may or may not take effect in some distant and uncertain future? Identical is the case of those who attach undue importance to this world and those who have allowed great significance to it. They show more respect and regard to it than they do to Allah the Almighty, and they get attached to it and become its slaves. The example of the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, is before you to follow. It is sufficient for your guidance that he has censored this world and has fully explained its evils, corruptions, and vices. Its vicious and wicked pleasures were not for him, but were for enemies of Allah and man. He did not enjoy the pleasures of life, nor did he bedeck himself with its pomp and glory. If you want to study the lives of great men, then the life of Prophet Moses is before you. He always invoked Allah thus, "Lord, I was really in need of what you have kindly granted to me. Please, Lord, do not forsake me." In fact, he was praying for a loaf of bread, as he usually ate vegetables and lived upon succulent herbs. He lived so long on green vegetables, uncooked and unsavored, that the delicate thin mucous membranes of his stomach took up a green tint. If you like, there is before you the example of Prophet David, with melodious voice of paradise, upon whom the Psalms were revealed. He used to make baskets from the leaves of date palm tree, sold them, and earned his livelihood from the sale proceeds. Though he was a king and had a large army at his command, he very often would ask his companions to purchase his baskets so that he might buy. You can take lesson from the noble examples of Jesus Christ. He used stone as a pillow and put on rough clothes and ate coarse food. Hunger was the only source that he ever used. Only the moon lighted his nights, and only the sun gave him warmth during the winters. His desserts, sweetmeat and fruits, were the green vegetables, which were eaten by animals also. He had no wife to allure him to worldly ways, no children whose love might stand between him and his duty. He had no wealth, the protection and procurement of which might drive away the thoughts of the next world from his mind. He was not greedy, therefore he never humiliated himself. His vehicles were his legs, and his servants were his hands. But the best example for you is that of our holy prophet. Follow him sincerely and faithfully. He is the greatest leader for those who require a leader, and the best teacher for those who want to achieve self-respect. Among his creatures, Allah most likes him who obeys his prophet and follows in his footsteps. Our holy prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, made use of the worldly things only for the barest necessities of life, and never thought of obtaining any comfort or ease in life, even temporarily. He ate very little and generally went without food. The pleasures of the world were presented to him, but he refused to accept them. His will was the will of Allah. He detested those things which were disliked by Allah. He scorned those things which were scorned by Allah, and he despised those deeds which were held in contempt by Allah. Remember that when we like those things that are disliked by Allah and His Holy Prophet, and get attached to those things that are detested by Allah and His Holy Prophet, it is enough to make ourselves enemies of Allah and rebels against His commandments. Our Holy Prophet used to take his meals sitting on the ground. He used to sit like an ordinary poor person, not like a king or a lord. He cobbled his own shoes, washed his own clothes, rode on the bare back of donkey. There too, if there was scarcity of mounts, he used to make somebody ride behind him. Once he found a curtain on his door having some pictures upon it, he asked his wife to remove the curtain, saying that those pictures remind him of this wicked world and its vicious allurements. He disliked glamour and splendor of this world, and he had no desire of them in his mind. He despised and hated ostentation of luxurious life, lest they should tempt him to think this world as an abode of permanent stay, or a place for luxury and opulence. He had absolutely no liking for a life of comfort and ease. It had no charm for him, and no place in his heart. Even the very talk of it was loathsome to him. He hated to see it around him, and to hear about its allurements in the society was like a person who hates to see his worst enemy and loathes to hear him mentioned in the society. Verily, the life and character of the Holy Prophet will teach you how wicked and vicious this world is, and how evil are its ways. He, the members of his family, Ahlul Bayt, and his faithful followers often went hungry And though he had supremely high place in the kingdom of Allah, yet he avoided ostentations and pomp in his way of life, and his true followers followed him in this respect. A man with common sense can very well make out whether the Almighty Allah, by assigning such a simple life to his chosen prophet, has really shown high regards towards him or has humiliated him. If he says that Allah has humiliated him and has apportioned a life of poverty and destitution to him, then he lies. Because historical fact shows that the Holy Prophet was a scion of a fairly rich and noble family, had married Lady Khadija, a very wealthy woman, and became the ruler and leader of the Arab state. Therefore, simple and poor life was not forced upon him as a humiliation or as a necessity. But he voluntarily adopted it, and it was assigned to him by Allah as a sign of his high regards towards his Prophet. To be a leader and a wealthy man, and to lead voluntarily the life of humbleness, and to give away all his wealth to the poor, is not a sign of humiliation, but a mark of greatness. If he thinks that Allah has thus raised the status of the Prophet, he will have to admit that by granting the life of wealth, splendor, and luxury to his enemies, and by keeping it from his most exalted Prophet, he has humiliated the enemies of the Holy Prophet. Therefore, it is the duty of his followers to take a lesson from his life and try to follow in his footsteps and to lead a life as the Prophet of Allah had led. Otherwise, nothing can save them from eternal damnation. Remember that the Almighty Allah has apportioned to him the mission of admonishing you for the Day of Judgment, of bringing to you the glad tidings of the paradise, and of warning you of the hell. He left the world as a poor man, though he was the leader of the Islamic world, and he reached his destiny with well-deserved grandeur. Till he lived, he never built a house for himself, and when Allah called him, he left happily for his eternal home. The greatest blessing of the merciful Allah upon us is that He granted us a prophet, a guide to follow, and a leader to obey. Look at me. I have stitched patches on my dress so often that I feel ashamed to hand it over to somebody for any more patches. Somebody suggested to me to throw it away, but I told him, "Be gone. Do not try to tempt me, because those who bear hardship in this life will pass happy days in the world hereafter." Sermon 164. In this sermon, Imam Ali has praised the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, explaining the functions of prophethood. He counsels people to embrace Islam and follow its tenets sincerely and faithfully. He further advises people to fear Allah, to do good, and to take warning from the lives and deaths of people gone before them. The Almighty Allah sent the Holy Prophet as his messenger, accompanied with the divine light, a clear code, laws and precepts of Islam, an illuminated path, Sunnah, and a divine book of guidance, the Holy Quran. His ancestors and descendants were from the best race of mankind. His progeny, Ahlul Bayt, were people of glorious and sublime character, and his teachings were the best guide for mankind. His birthplace is Makkah, and his place of migration is Medina. From Medina, his fame extended far and wide, and his preachings were propagated widely. The merciful Allah sent him with manifest proofs to establish his prophethood, with the most convincing discourse to warn people of the consequences of a sinful life, and with the religion which will remove from society every sin, vice, impiety, and crime. Through Islam, the Holy Prophet taught humanity such principles of truth and justice as were not known to it on account of its ignorance. He eradicated those wicked innovations which had crept in the religions of the world. He clearly explained orders and interdictions of Allah. If a person now adopts any religion other than Islam, it will be his misfortune. He will ruin himself, will be committing a grave mistake, and will seal his fate for eternal damnation. My trust is in Allah, and my return is to Him. I pray to Him to guide me to the straight path which will lead me to His paradise. It is the destination which He wishes every human being to reach. O people, I advise you to fear and obey Allah, because His fear and His obedience are the two means of salvation on the Day of Judgment, a salvation which is eternal. Our Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, tried his best to acquaint and warn you of the horrors of the hell and the consequences of his wrath. He not only explained to you, but he also cited examples from your society and from history of the ultimate results of achievement of wealth and power. He told you how rapidly wealth and power would part company with you,
how fast they decay,
and how quick is their deterioration. He advised you to avoid those worldly things which attract and allure you, because they will not be with you but for a short time only. Remember
that the world, which has great opportunities to allure you towards sin, is
an abode of his wrath and is a place with which he is not pleased. O creatures of Allah, do not engross yourself in achieving such a world, because you know it is not worthwhile to have it. It is not lasting, and it is not really beneficial. Be a kind and sympathetic advisor to yourself, and advise your inner self to refrain from such a toil and exertion. Take a lesson from history and from death and destruction of wealthy and powerful people who have passed away before you. Their names and fames are not with them, and their pleasures and pomp have vanished. They cannot any longer live with their wives and children. Their pride and vanity have gone. Their connections with humanity have been severed. They cannot bring forth children. They cannot meet one another, and they cannot be useful to their neighbors. O people, fear Allah like a man who has mastered his emotions and desires, and who has acquired complete control over his mind. Fear Allah like a man who has developed his knowledge and wisdom, and has achieved command over his passions. The canons of Islam and its commandments and prohibitions have been fully explained to you. This sign of guidance has already been fixed for you. the way of salvation is not hidden. It is a straight and open road. What more do you want? Sermon 165. One of his companions, a member of the clan of Bani Asad, asked Imam Ali as to how he was deprived of the caliphate, though as a member of the family, as the son-in-law, and as the closest companion of the Holy Prophet, he deserved it. In this sermon, Imam Ali has briefly explained the situation, drawn attention of the hearers to the irony of events and circumstances which connived with Muawiyah, the son of the arch enemy of Islam, claiming the caliphate. A lady of the clan of Bani Asad was the wife of the Holy Prophet. Imam Ali in this sermon has referred to it, saying that this relation had given the questioner a right to ask the question. O brother from the Bani Asad tribe, you apparently are not well aware of the circumstances which led to it. But as your tribe is related to the Holy Prophet, you have a right to ask such a question. You want to know the truth and to understand the reason as to why my rights were usurped and why such a despotism was adopted against me. You know very well that I come out of the best clan of Arabia and I am very closely related to the Holy Prophet. It was not because of my being a person of lowly origin or of coming from a distant tribe other than that of the Holy Prophet that his caliphate was usurped. But it was because a certain group of people had the inordinate desire to snatch away the rulership of the Muslim state, while the other group did not attach much importance to it. They were occupied in the burial ceremonies of the Holy Prophet. On the Day of Judgment, Allah will pass His decision between the right and the wrong. But, O friend, drop the subject on which much has been said and on which I have often spoken. But look at the irony of events happening now and look at the behavior of the son of Abu Sufyan. How the world has made me laugh at his foolish antics of running after such rapidly perishable things as worldly pomp and glory, and how it has made me sad at the fate of Muslims and Islam. Nothing in it surprises me. But what made me wonder at Muawiyah is the fact that after wickedly attaining his heart's desire, a despotic rulership of a rich state, he is not satisfied and is constantly busy in introducing innovations and schism in Islam. This enemy of Allah wanted to extinguish the divine light, to close the fountain of divine knowledge, to pollute the crystal clear spring of Islam. If I pass through these periods of trials and seditions successfully, I shall try my best to remove these innovations, clear the sources of divine knowledge of all pollution, and make Islam guide you towards Allah, as I should. But if I fail, do not lose hope. Allah knows what Muawiyah and his party are after. Allah will protect Islam against them.